Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. She'll have full draft reaction next week and then team-by-team previews all summer to get you ready for next season. That's The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Listen wherever you're listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Man, that's the day that we had to have. We're going to record it later, make sure we get the draft stuff in. It's just so much. I feel like I'm wasting valuable time just talking, man. It's just a lot to get to.
Hey, yo, I'm not even going to lie. Dominique had some outing to go play golf this morning. And last night after Lamar the draft, I sent him a text that said, and I quote, man, golf. And it turned out the universe felt the same way because they canceled the golf. And I was like, hey, call Spencer and let him know Dominique's back in the game because Lamar Jackson signed the contract. Don't get me wrong. We got the draft stuff to talk about. Like, we pushed back our record because we didn't think it'd be right to come out here and not talk about the draft. And I remember I told somebody, I was like, you know, it's also possible that something happens with Lamar, given that the draft has happened. And then, boom, Lamar got his contract. I'm a little reluctant to say Lamar got his money because from the reports, it sure sounds like the contract that he got is very similar to the one that was being offered to him about a year ago when he went out there and played with all that risk. But it's done, right? I do think there's a fair argument that people make that, well, maybe he extracted some measure of leverage and that's why they went and got Odell Beckham and, like, turned some things around. But is it going to be like nothing ever happened?
And drafted Zay Flowers. Yeah, it's going to be like nothing ever happened. I guarantee you it's going to be like nothing ever happened. He's going to come out there. But the Ravens fans cheered Ray Rice.
Well, I mean, with the fans, I figured it would be like nothing ever happened. I'm thinking about with the bosses.
Nah, I think the same thing. They all know that they are married now, and they all know that their fates are intertwined. I don't think it's going to be any beef, and it appears as if not only did they sign Odell Beckham, they went and got Zay Flowers. We went from being able to legitimately complain about Lamar's weapons to being like, hey, brother, they done gave you Odell. They got you new offensive coordinator. They drafted a first-round quarterback, and Bateman is a number one receiver if he can stay healthy. And we ain't even got to Andrews. Or J.K. Dobbins. So, Lamar, you got the money, you got the players, you got the coordinator. They are a legitimate Super Bowl contender now.
Yeah, it's officially no excuses territory. Also,
yeah, right? we are in that territory for Lamar, and he's a special player that a lot of people been trying to put him in no excuses territory for a while, and now he's finally there.
Yeah, I just always feel like, and you and I have talked about this many times, that the part that people don't get is, just because he's fast doesn't mean he can't do the other stuff. And all the cliches about quote-unquote pocket passing and everything else, none of that's ever really stood up to scrutiny from the people who do the film stuff. It never has. Well, now, you got the players. You're right, Dobbins is going to be back. H-Town. Very important thing, because, okay, now you got the running game. What else we got? Like, if Ronnie Stanley can stop getting hurt, the party's on.
I've talked about this a bunch of times. This is one of the things, like, we all get the draft right and wrong. The Lamar Jackson thing was one of the things I got right. And I thought, because when I watched him, I, like everybody else, saw the highlights and was like, oh, it's Michael Vick out here. And then I sat down and watched him. It was like, no, this guy, like, he does not want to scramble out of the pocket. He's comfortable there. He obviously reads NFL level offenses. The accuracy was an issue. I remember watching his bowl game and just being so angry. Like, God, man, throw it to the guy. Like, I want you to be the man. Just throw it to the guy. He wide open. But I remember going into that draft, I said that he had a chance. Well, I say he was the best quarterback in this draft. But the real question was, is the NFL ready for a player like that? The Ravens were. He was the MVP in 2 years. You could argue now that he may not be the best quarterback in that draft because Josh Allen took his time figuring out what he could do. And, yeah, if you give me the choice between one of those two guys in a big game, it'd take me a minute. I might end up on Josh because of what I've seen him do in those situations. But the fact of the matter is there's no reason why Lamar Jackson couldn't have turned into the quarterback that he has, and there's no reason why he can't become even better going forward. I think some of the limitations on his success in the pocket, some of it is based on him because he has those accuracy games. I went to one, I remember, with my son to the Browns game, I think it was last year, where I was like, all right, Lamar, yo guys, got on the black helmets. throw it at them. But I also have seen games where he's picking people apart. So we'll see how it goes this year with the new offense. I do think that he has the capability to take another step. That MVP year was something different. I don't know if we're going to see that again, but like just his ability to pass and his control and his command of the game has never been a problem for him, or decision-making never been a problem for him. It's just always been like consistent accuracy.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's the thing that people feel like you can't teach, but then again, counterpoint Josh Allen, right?
Which and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. But I'd say these things can't happen from time to time. And I don't know what exactly it is with Jackson. You, of course, you hope that he comes back healthy. That's the big thing. Because the health has been the real issue the last couple of years. Like, we can try to itemize this into these individual traits or whatever it is. But when he's been healthy,
that's fair.
They've been really good. I think they're 8-3 by the time he got hurt last year. You know, if he stays healthy, it'll be a thing. Now, let me talk about this pressure cooker, though, that the AFC is going to be. Because I saw somebody put together their own list specifically on this. I'm going to go through the quarterbacks in the AFC. And I'm even going to bring up some of them that ain't even necessarily that good anymore, just to make the point, right? Josh Allen, Tua, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Russell Wilson, who I do feel like you still got to throw in here for salary reasons, right?
Herbert.
Patrick Holmes and Justin Herbert. At most, six of those guys are going to make the playoffs. I didn't count how many dudes I said, but I know damn well it's more than six.
You go over to the NFC and you got Jalen Hurts and you already at Dak Prescott.
Right. Like, you're at Jalen Hurts. Like, remembering, of course, that the Pro Bowl quarterbacks last year in the NFC were Jalen Hurts, Geno Smith, and Kirk Cousins. I don't know who wound up coming after everybody said they didn't want to go no more. But those were the Pro Bowl quarterbacks in the NFC last year. The AFC, I just can't imagine the pressure in this world where everybody think a quarterback win or lose the game. Like I always say, the thing about like your top five MCs is that it's only five.
Yeah. The thing, yeah, they... And then you put on top of it, we have quite possibly the best quarterback we've ever seen in the AFC. So it's not even just that there's a lot of really good ones. You got some great ones out there. And one that might be the greatest. And I think to be fair to Lamar, to take it back to him just for a second, is as you are listing those guys, if for whatever reason I fall into this trap too, where we focus on Lamar's shortcomings, ain't nobody perfect. All the people that we name have issues that they have not been able to fully address. So the fact that Lamar's issues are ones that we focus on, I think is because we're not accustomed to having a player like Lamar. I thought of that when you brought up the fact that last two seasons, the real shortcoming was that he wasn't on the field.
Right.
When he's on the field, they nasty. Every play ain't perfect, but neither is every play for Patrick Mahomes. And you got to understand that. But yeah, this AFC is going to be a pressure cooker is the word for it.
Hold on. The only two guys that we listed that I would confidently say right now, oh, he's better than Lamar Jackson are Mahomes and Allen.
Yeah.
I'm not confidently saying that with Justin Herbert. Can you imagine if Lamar Jackson was the quarterback with that lead they blew against Jacksonville last year in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine what the discussion would be? Only two that I'm like.
Burrow?
I'm not certain.
Yeah.
Like, it's a discussion. I'm not going to wave you off if you've got Burrow. But, and this is no knock to Joe Burrow. Hey, man, he real good at throwing that ball to Jamar Chase. He real good at throwing that ball to T. Higgins. Yeah. You know, like, I feel like I'd be, I mean, I wouldn't be that good at it, but I feel like Lamar would.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say sometimes every now and then people are like, man, I could complete one pass in the NFL and we all laugh at him. I don't know. if you could stay on your feet for 2 seconds and throw it up in Jamar's direction, Yeah, if you could get it to him, you might throw a touchdown pass in the NFL. So, yeah, that's fair to say. I think they're an interesting team going forward, but this is a whole nother podcast. I won't derail us, but they're at that point where we remember the Patriots being there where, we got to make some decisions about what we're going to turn this offense into, or where the Chiefs were there a couple years ago. We got to make some decisions of what we're going to turn this offense into. They're going to have to make some decisions.
Yeah. I mean, look, man, what nobody rooting harder for the Ravens in these negotiations than Mike Brown, the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals. Wasn't nobody rooting harder for the Eagles in these negotiations than Mike Brown of the Cincinnati Bengals. Because for those of you who don't know, Mike Brown is the cheapest man on earth. right? Yeah. And so when people are like, was Philly guaranteed thing? Oh, wait till you see what happens with Burrow and Herbert. I'm like, it might happen with Herbert. Mm-hmm. It ain't happening with Burrow. Like, it ain't happening with Herbert either, because those guys ain't exactly out here making it rain either. But I was like, no, don't you worry. Mike Brown, the man who had, remember when Andre Smith came out and the holdup, I think that, was that your draft, the Andre Smith draft?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, but the whole, no, it wasn't, because that's, no, this is, wait, sorry. I'm thinking about the complete wrong year. My bad. But that was the Darius Hayward Bay. That's the Maryland guy I was thinking of. Yeah. But the reason that Andre Smith holdout took place was Al Davis overpaid for Darius Hayward Bay. Mm-hmm. And Andre Smith was the pick before him. And Mike Brown was like, what that got to do with me? Riddle me that, dog. What that got to do with me?
Oh, gosh, the negotiation, man. And I guess this ties into Lamar a little bit, too, because he didn't have an agent and we haven't seen all the details of the contract. But it seemed like it ain't matter that much. He got the money at the end of the day. But the question for Joe Burrow, or the, because I don't think that it changes everything. The holdout idea to get fully guaranteed contract, the fact that Lamar signed one, I think these contracts are in isolation in some ways, in that the value of the players is so big that if a player was like, no, there is a team that's going to pay it, it ain't going to be Mike Brown, no. Because Mike Brown going to be like, I ain't got it.
And when he says, yeah, I ain't got it, he you ain't making it up.
Yeah, it's a whole different story where, like, I don't know, you try to play hard to get, you break up with somebody, you're like, all right, I ain't going to text them for the next couple of days. You ain't got nobody else to text. Your fingers get real itchy. Mike Brown, he ain't gonna have nobody else to text to get that money. So Joe Burrow gonna have to go ahead and take that franchise tag or take whatever's on the table.
Yeah, like a thing about businesses, and I, you know, for people who don't really like get in the weeds about like accounting and everything else, a very important thing really is how much cash do you have? Like money on hand. And so cash is really, in a lot of ways, the delineating factor on how rich these dudes are. Like how Brian and I talk about this a lot. If you're going to buy an NFL team, and I know it's the case for a baseball team, I'm pretty sure it's the same for an NFL team, you got to be 30% liquid of the sale price. Mm. Okay. So whoever's going to buy the Commandos, you got to have $2.2 billion cash.
Homie.
Cash, straight cash, homie.
Absurd.
Right. Just laying over there in savings, you have to have $2.2 billion. By the same token, when you sign these dudes, you got to have the money in cash. Now, the PA has made the argument that they want to try to get rid of that provision because the money is just so big in football that everybody's going to eventually have the money, to which I say, I don't know about that. But that's where it is. So if you're going to guarantee whatever this contract is, you got to have this money in cash. When Jimmy Haslam gave that 230 guaranteed to Deshaun Watson, they had to write a check for $230 million. And put it in escrow. Mike Brown just owns the Bengals. Yeah. That's it. Like, they finally got naming rights on the stadium, in part, for the day that this would happen, the day that this would come, so you'd have the cash on hand.
He going to have to sell a piece. That man going to have to sell a piece of that franchise in order to guarantee $250 million. He's gonna have to bring on some more ownership groups or something. But yeah, it's the difference between being like, yeah, liquid cash and having it tied up in assets. And so like you can move like stocks and bonds and stuff. You can move those quickly. It ain't as easy to move some real estate or to move a NFL franchise or a portion of NFL franchise. Yes. So I'm with you with the PA as far as like it ends up being a negotiating leverage point that teams have. Is like, man, we can't guarantee that because we don't even got it. And they are genuine. But also, we assume that everybody gonna get paid, but nah. These businesses are not, and I don't mean any disrespect, but they are not hugely successful because the individual operators are savvy. They are hugely successful because they exist in a legal cartel.
Yes.
You know, like, it's not like the Premier League where if you stink, and you can't manage your business well, you're going to go ahead and drop down? No, these guys can't drop down. So there could be someone up there, and there has been evidence that there are people up there running teams who make really bad choices.
Yes. Hold on. Not just a cartel that sell ice cream.
Oh, it's so delicious. It's you so know? Delicious. Ice cream with some Coke sprinkled in it. Like this. Because I've been someone who like, and you and I both like recognize how unfair the draft is and propose like abolishing the draft. And I've also been someone like, I ain't going to watch this, man. It's just them calling out names. But God damn, if it ain't exciting to start extrapolating out what's going to happen with these names.
Yo, I can't lie. I've never been a person that was like super into the draft like that. Right. Like I still miss the 2-day draft where you just did it on Saturday. And I was just like, where are we as a society? How backwards are we that we got to stretch this out 3 days into a primetime event? Like, I'll be honest with you, sticking around, spending your Friday night watching the second round. Not a good look at all. Right. So I had a talk on Thursday night at UPenn in Philadelphia. So we are actually recording Fox Sports Friday on Friday, which we rarely do. So I did this talk at UPenn. I get on the Acela to come back. I'm not really trying to watch the draft on the phone. All I need to know is who the picks are, right? So I see a pick, go do some other stuff, come back, pull the screen down, come back. So at first, I had done it, and it was just the first pick, right? Bryce Young. We knew what that was going to be. My homie Kirk sends me a text and was like, said something about the Texans. And I was like, yo, did they take Levis? And he goes, no, they took Anderson at 3, but I'm not thinking, right? Then I'm like, wait a minute. They took Anderson at 3. And then I go back and I look and I see they took CJ Stroud at 2. And I was like, they got y'all again. I was always wondering. I was talking to Spencer about this a couple days before the draft. And I was like, so who hit the waitress button on the Will Levis stock that drove him up to this number 2? Somebody put it on Reddit that he might go number 2. Then he had these crazy odds about going number 1. I was like, oh, yeah. I knew that white was going to kick in at some point, and people were going to drive this thing up. And then after everybody saying CJ Stroud got a bad attitude, CJ Stroud disrespected the Mannings, all these things that came up about CJ Stroud, the Texans are like, dude, we're not even this stupid. Come on, buddy. Come on down, and let's do this. Meanwhile, Will Levis still sitting in there like, hey, it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah, that sucks, man. Poor Will. I mean, you called the Richardson climb and the Levis drop. You called that before the college football season even started. So, like, just being around the draft enough, you have become a real analyst. You ain't had to watch the tape or nothing. You ain't even had to see the seeds. You're like, you know what? This super athlete, he going to find a way to the top of draft. You know what? This guy going to drop, but they going to tell us he good.
Yep.
That's exactly what happened. God, I felt sick for Will, man. I fell asleep and woke back up, and he was still there looking sad.
Dog, where I felt for him was the last pick of the first round was the Chiefs, and I just imagined him being like, hey, guys, you never know. You never know. You never know, right? Or hoping that somebody would jump up like they did for like Teddy Bridgewater or Lamar Jackson. Because the thing is, and this to me is the bad, bad side for Will Levis in this. The reason to jump up to that last pick in the first round and get that dude is the fifth-year option. So if you've got a good quarterback, you can now, if first-round pick, you can take a fifth-year option on their contract. You can't do that with the second-round pick, which is why it made sense for Baltimore to go up to 32 and get Lamar Jackson. Nobody wanted to even get the fifth year option on a dude that has all the physical tools and everything else. And while his senior year, he wasn't as good, let him tell it, the junior year, the film was looking all right.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no telling where this goes from here.
I just imagine that scenario where you're talking about, and I just assume that his mom and his girlfriend or whoever was there, they had already taken their shoes off. They took their shoes off around pick 18. So I just imagine them gathering their shoes and purses, he putting his coat back on. And they look up, oh, Kansas City. Oh, let's get on up out of here.
Yep.
They call it an agent. Like, is any movement happening? Like, that sucks.
Yo, that's where the agent, when Will goes to the bathroom, gets mom and girlfriend over, and it's like, all right, let me explain to you what's going on, right? Like, the doctor that has to break the diagnosis down, right? Like,
let me tell you a little story. So I'm old enough to be drafted in the old days of the draft where it was 2 days. And so I was on a Saturday, first, second, third round of Saturday, and the rest of the rounds on Sunday. So, of course, I'm good player, all American type player, all conference. I think I'm going. I don't think I'm going to first round, but second round, third round, of course. So we had people over. We got hats in the house ready for me to put one on, waiting for that call for the general manager. I went, where'd I go? Number 97. And if you understand basic mathematics, 97 is after three rounds. But goddamn, I love them compensatory picks. So I went on the first day, but we was milling around the house trying to have us a little good time. And the mood of the party is real sour. But then my name got called and we could all turn up.
I'm imagining you play the cool, playing it less cool, playing it less cool. Why you calling me? No, I don't know what's going on. I'm in here with y'all.
Yeah, it was, it ended up being fun because, you know, like the euphoria of like getting that close to the brink made it feel a lot better than I would have imagined. But boy, if I'd have had to, like, just imagine it standing at the door watching people leave, like, oh yeah, I appreciate y'all coming. Yeah, tomorrow, hey, it's gonna be tomorrow. And I'm gonna make them pay. I'm gonna show them. Because now Will Levis got to do that whole foolishness. He's like, hey, I'm gonna make them all pay. He got to do that.
Well, the one I felt the worst for was Geno Smith. And the reason was he had been through so much hell through the process. Like, it was going the opposite direction of Will Levis. Well, Levis was like roundly considered the fourth best quarterback. And then you had people talking themselves into it. And like, Kuiper was all big on him and stuff like that. And then it went back the other way. Geno Smith, we came into that draft. He is the best quarterback in this draft. We had seen that dude throw for like 11 touchdown passes in that one game. We had seen him have that crazy bowl game against Clemson the year before. Like, and he was there, and it was his chance for vindication after being called stupid, basically, and lazy by the dude that wrote that crazy Pro Football Weekly draft profile. By the way, fun fact, when Pro Football Weekly finally let that guy go, who gave him a job? John Gruden. But anyway, and so you saw with Geno, he had that look on his face, and then they didn't take him, right? It took that man literally 9 years to recover in sum total from that day to get to the where he is right now. With Levis, I'm looking at everybody like, yo, Joe Thomas had the right idea. And Joe Thomas knew he was going in the fifth, they get first top five picks of the draft. You know what he did? He went fishing.
Yep.
He went fishing during the draft. Come back and find out.
There's another lineman who did the same thing this year. I mean, there's always a couple guys who do the right thing, but that moment has to be really cool. And if I'm Will Levis, like, I'm going in the first round. Like, I don't blame him. I would have gone, too.
Yeah.
Going to the first round. But damn, that's.
Well, also, imagine, they don't ask you to come unless they think you going somewhere around the first round. Like, they go ask around and stuff like that. But they don't want you on camera going through all of this. Because one thing I've also noticed that they don't seem to do nearly as much in the draft is the guy at home that's falling.
Yeah.
Nah, they're not showing him, you know, stressed out.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I mean, I think they probably aren't looking for it. But one thing about the draft, why I have to admit that it's interesting now, is they've done a better job of keeping the pick secret. I'm shocked. Yeah. Every year since they moved it to primetime, there is something that's surprising. And also, I don't think that they, as powerful as the NFL is, they could keep guys out from getting embarrassed. I don't think they care that much. I do think if they put a camera in your house, there's an understanding like, oh, we ain't gonna do you like that because somebody will knock that goddamn camera over.
Yeah,
but when in the green room, then you are fair game. Oh,
yeah. So I say green room's a little different, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
But the cats at the crib,
yeah,
we not doing that nearly as much as we did where you just see the guy pacing around, you know, with all of those things. We don't seem to be playing that game.
I think somebody camera equipment got smashed because that's what I'd have done. I mean, I'd turn it off. You got some camera up in here and just show me looking like a damn fool as I slide down the draft. Oh nah. Who did they do that to? They did it to somebody in their home. I can't remember. It was a couple years ago. Somebody, I feel like it was a quarterback, was in their home looking real stressed.
Well, the ultimate is when they put them cameras in Drew Pearson's house thinking he was about to get into the Hall of Fame. And he was right. He was like, y'all did all this just to do me like this? Like, it never dawned on him that they would put a camera in his house unless he was going to the Hall of Fame. At that time, he did not. And he was hot.
It's like, It's like the LeBron decision. Like, yep. you know the answer. So like, let's set this up so we can succeed. Like, at the Hall of Fame, the draft, you can be like, all right, well, we don't exactly know. We got a feeling. But the Hall of Fame, somebody know the answer. Y'all need to tell me before y'all set all this shit up in my house.
My homeboy Terry was covering the decision because he worked local news in Cleveland at the time. You know, he's out there at the bars. And that was a wild night because I was hearing the people in the background, like, just screaming, man, LeBron, like they was doing the whole nine, right? But he said somebody, wherever it was when the decision came down, was like, you put us on national television just to kick us in the nuts. Like, that's how it feels when it's you send the cameras.
It's that Maury Povich when he's not the father. Like, you already knew. Why you bring me on here to get an answer that you had an idea of already?
Right. Hey, I tell you this, though, for Levis, the person Levis need to be mad at is that Nick Caserio.
Oh, yeah.
And look, apparently, D'Amico Ryans learned something from Kyle Shanahan because we just went through this 2 years ago. It was different 2 years ago because it was the long play, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if Kyle did it himself. Chris Sims, who, if you do not know, has his initials tattooed on Kyle Shanahan's ankle and vice versa. I'm not making that up. It's the truth. Anyway, when they made that trade to get Trey Lance, to get the pick that became Trey Lance, the number three pick, Sims made a reasonable statement, which was, you do that to get a quarterback that's ready to play, and the quarterback that'll be ready to play, that'll be available at three, was Mac Jones, except all of us have seen Mac Jones play before, and none of us thought that he was the number three pick in the draft, or at the very least, did not think he was the number three pick in the draft that you traded three first-round picks to go get. And we're like, yo, this can't be it. But everybody jumped on board, right? A, it's Shanahan. He must be a genius. And two, like, yeah, there's one more white dude left. This seems about right. And you saw everybody talk themselves into stuff that was contrary to every evaluation that everybody had. And then the draft came around. And what do you know? Trey Lance goes. Now, you can have your own argument about how good Trey Lance will or will not be. But nothing that Mac Jones has done in New England, I think, has made San Francisco regret the fact that they took Trey Lance, right? Like, I mean, nothing has happened in New England. Like, no. He's not that guy. It hasn't happened. This time, we talked ourselves out of C.J. Stroud, whom we had seen play, whom we had seen be a beast, whom the last time we saw play wrecked shop against a defense that's so good that the Eagles are trying to complete the set and draft every single player in the front seven that Georgia had, right? They are making this complex.
We haven't even got to the Eagles and how they just are.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Leasing the whole league. And yeah. Why, before we get to the Eagles and how scary that is, something just hit me. There's going to be some rule changes in the NFL. They're going to do something. And you may be looking at me like I'm crazy, but wait till I explain something to you. Then you're going to be like, yep, they about to fix this. Who's the best quarterback in football? Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Who's the two highest paid players in all the league? Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts. Who are the first three quarterbacks drafted in this draft? Black dudes.
Yep. Something's going down.
We got a rule change coming down the pipe.
Hey, guys, as crazy as you think this is, I'll never forget the first time I saw Harry Edwards speak, and he was talking about the quarterback situation. And when Vic Culpepper, you know, that run of dudes started coming, what they did was they started making those punitive roughing the passer penalties where if you just touch the guy on the helmet, that you got 15 yards because they had to slow up those defensive backs. Guys, it's turning into a problem when can't nobody even talk themselves into Will Levis, right? Like something has fundamentally changed.
And so you might be listening to this and thinking that Dominique is arguing that the NFL is just flat out, I hate black people racist. No, it's a different type of racism. It's because they think that you are I hate black people type of racist. They know that the stars of this entertainment property are the quarterbacks. That is who the people who are 3 degrees removed from you, who is a super fan, they don't know nobody but 4 or 5 quarterback names. And you know what they believe? The same way the NBA is probably concerned about all these international players. They know that the stars that sell consistently or that they have known to sell consistently are tall, white dudes.
The secret sauce for viewership is white. That's the unspoken part of the rise of the popularity in women's college basketball.
Yeah.
They ain't just still got white girls. They cold. Something so you can root for.
They need to go down to the lower levels. And I don't know if it's baseball. I don't know if it's soccer. I don't know what these cold white dude athletes are playing, but they need to get them to start playing quarterback so that we can get some more Josh Allens and Joe Herbert. Joe Herbert. I'm combining
Joe Burrow
and Justin Herbert. Need to get some more of them in the league, because if we get to a situation where it's a bunch of Lamar Jacksons and Jalen Hurts to face the league, the NFL is going to be concerned, not because they care who their labor is. It's because they think that y'all care who the labor is.
They're going to get so desperate. Somebody going to try to get Mike Trout to convert. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to be like, hey, man, why don't you come down to it? But I just love, though, with Stroud, the people fell for it again, right? Like, it worked again. And so the Texans then got Stroud. And the argument was they didn't want Stroud because Mulgetta represents him. And I'm like, nah, that's not how this is going to go. Like, that's not good. Mulgetta did not cause the Texans problems. In fact, I don't even know what Deshaun Watson really, they caused Mulgetta more problems. Like, Mulgetta might have not wanted him to go there, but the Texans, no, they were going to make that move. And then I don't understand what they did with that trade for Will. When I looked up and what all they gave up in this trade to get the number three pick to draft Will Anderson. Okay, so they did the pick swap this year, right? So to move up to three, they gave up 12. They also gave up 33 this year, which is, for all intents and purposes, a first-round pick. The first round this year only had 31 picks rather than 32. Yep. So this is basically like the first pick in the second round, which might as well be a first-round pick. First-round pick next year. And I expect the Texans are going to stink, so that's probably going to be a high pick. Third-round pick next year. I expect the Texans are going to stink, so that's probably going to be a good pick. All that for a guy that I'm not sure is as good as advertised.
I mean, and Will Anderson.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, he's probably the best at that position in the draft, but sometimes they're just, like, last year there wasn't no quarterbacks in the draft. He is not Myles Garrett, which, if you are drafting edge player, if you're trading away a bunch of stuff to draft an edge player, I'm going to need to be like, yeah, I'm looking at somebody who has Bosa potential, has Garrett potential. I don't think he has that. He going to be good. He might find his way into a Pro Bowl or two, but he not going to be the guy that I think you can build your whole defense around, or that's worth all that trading away. And of course, we all are wrong plenty of times. I might be wrong, but either way, that's not a gamble that I'm willing to take. If he fell to me, that's a different story.
That would have been a huge package to get Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, I could not believe it. Then you also got Anthony Richardson wound up going to the Colts, which will be interesting to me because, like, we're still in the first generation of black quarterbacking. And the reason I mentioned that is, if, as far as I can tell, that's going to be the first time that the Colts have had a black quarterback truly on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I would not count Jacoby Brissett as, we did this on purpose. Like, this was a bridge thing. We kind of need to hold it down. Andrew Luck retired on us, you know, all of that. This is the build around for a guy that's probably going to come with some growing pains. And unfortunately, they're probably going to try to play this year, because I don't know who else plays for them.
They're definitely going to play him this year. And the most interesting part about this is that they went and got Shane Steichen. And that's what makes this, that's what should give Colts fans more confidence than anything. And that's what should give them more patience than anything. Shane Steichen, for those who don't know, was offensive coordinator of the Eagles. And Jalen Hurts set out the first year pretty much and built on that. And then they put him in and he was like, all right, we're going to build around this running game. It gave him time to, like, keep the offense afloat while he got better at other stuff. And so they got players out there. They got some athletic tight ends and some players out there to help him. And they got Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
So combining him and Jonathan Taylor, they could be competitive in games. And that's the scary part. They could be competitive in games offensively just because they're running a college-style offense, because they got two monsters in the backfield.
Yeah. Now, speaking of monsters in the backfield, as we go through this first round, tell you right now, the number one pick in your fantasy draft need to be Bijan Robinson. And the reason I'm saying this is not simply because he's the best running back prospect to me, at least since Ty Gurley, and probably before, because Ty Gurley was coming in off of an ACL tear. I knew when people were like, oh, you don't take a running back first round. What about taking a running back at this place? And I was like, okay, this one is different. And what I kept telling people was, be very afraid that he goes to Philadelphia. Like, that to me was the most terrifying part, that the Eagles had the number 10 pick, and you put him with Jalen Hurts, with A.J. Brown, with Devontae Smith, and I just don't know what in the world you're supposed to do.
And that offensive line.
And that offensive line, right? But what I forgot was that the Falcons were there at 8 with Arthur Smith, who has his job because of a gentleman named Derrick Henry, okay? They go get that boy the ball like he Earl Campbell, because don't nothing else make sense. Like, maybe this Desmond Ridder thing got something going that I was not able to see in the limited amount of time I chose to watch the Atlanta Falcons. But this guy, with Arthur Smith, they gonna give him the ball so much, and he gonna be so cold if they can block even a little bit. But good gracious, they're going to stay. Like, the only reason they're not going to give them the ball is you can't do that when you lose the 21 to nothing.
I mean, I don't get the rationale behind Atlanta making the pick, but I don't want to get into, like, the boring minutia.
No, I gave it to you right there. Arthur Smith wants to run the ball a lot.
Yeah, but that don't make no damn sense. Like, this is, to me, the argument for getting Bijan is a team that is close to the championship.
I agree.
Yeah, you can't build around a running back like it's 1990. Like, this is a team that's rebuilding. You don't build around a running back like that. You just can't rely on them to be healthy and whatever. All that aside, I can understand the defense for drafting Bijan, because the defense is, look at this tape. I can't understand why Detroit went and got Jahmyr Gibbs, but they just was like, I think what happened was they wanted Bijan and they thought Bijan was going to be there. And it was like, damn, we'll go ahead and get this Alabama running back who is something like it, but not quite.
Because who did they trade back with?
I don't even remember.
Like, I have forgotten who they made the trade back with, because I was for them. I was like, oh boy, if Anthony Richardson sneaked down to them, ooh, baby, this could wind up being something, right? Because they wouldn't need to play him. And then the chance would come around because Jared Goff is passable. Like, if nothing else, I thought that would be what happened. But now the Falcons.
They trade with the Cardinals. That's right, I think.
Yeah, Cardinals are just out here making moves, baby. Yeah. Stacking up. I mean, look, the Cardinals go draft a whole new team in the next 2 years on the strength of this. But the Eagles stayed at 10. And I was joking a little earlier about the Eagles trying to complete the set. At 10, they took Jalen Carter, who is believed by many people to be the best player in the draft. As those of you who are watching on YouTube could tell by the way that Dominique Fosbury scrunched up his lip, leaned back, and shook his head, and then get to the end of the first round, and they take Nolan Smith, the edge rusher from Georgia, after they had N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis last year from Georgia.
I'm one of those people who think that he's the best player in the draft. And I, on my podcast with Charlie proposed a scenario that Jalen Carter would drop to the Eagles. And I said, no bleeping way that the league let this happen again, or Howie Roseman can get this lucky one more time. Let me explain to y'all something. Like, I don't need to explain it to you. Jalen Carter is like the number one power ranking guy, like outside of positional value on, like, I don't know if it was Mel or McShay, but a lot of people like, this is the best player in the draft. Now, understand he had the driving situation. I understand that his pro day was weak, but they still got Fletcher Cox. They still got Reddick. They still got Jordan Davis. You're not supposed to be able to get him. I don't give a damn. It's not right. All right.
I worry about the driving thing for Jalen Carter for a different reason than I've heard anybody say, which is, dude, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, because apparently the pro day didn't go well, you know, and as much as we worry about the bad judgment was there. The bad judgment was obvious, right? Mm-hmm. Dude, he was involved in an incident where people he knew died.
Yeah.
He is 21 years old. That is rough. Like, that was my Brandon Miller question in the NCAA tournament. Y'all all worried about this. I'm like, yo, dude, are you good? Like, are you straight? Because there's a lot that's going on here. The Eagles, at least on some level, believe that he is. And then Nolan Smith, who, without the pec injury, is probably getting drafted in a similar space and place. And I think he, like, one of them engineering majors or something like that. Maybe that was him or Dean. I can't remember which. But Oh, goodness. The Eagles look frightening. Did you see the picture that Beta posted of Swaggu after?
Oh, yeah. I saw
it. And he just looked like,
that ain't fair, man. And like, I think that's fair of you to bring up the idea, is he okay? And don't nobody care about football players, whether they okay or not, because they are football players. And it's like, just go out there and break stuff, especially at that position. But yeah, the fallout from all of that, the making poor decisions in your 20s, okay, it's something we do.
Yeah.
All of us. But the fallout from it, I don't know. And I was, you know what, it's not funny, but it made me laugh a little bit. What was kind of concerning, that him and Roger already had an elaborate handshake. Yes. I was like, you're spending too much damn time with the commissioner if y'all got time to work out daps.
Y'all got to talk too much.
Yeah, y'all, that is concerning to me. But I don't know. I think the Eagles locker room, the veteran leadership at that position, like Fletcher Cox is a reasonable comp. Like the career that Fletcher Cox has, based on Fletcher Cox's build and ability, is like, hey, you guys could get something like that. So maybe, I'm sure the Eagles are smart enough to try to surround him with the people to get him in the right frame of mind. But sometimes there's some things you can't come back from. I know I've told you this story before. One of my teammates when I was in Denver two of my teammates died. One of them was murdered. And it ain't easy, man. Yeah, it ain't easy. And you're like in this hyper masculine place, and maybe the NFL has changed some here where it's just like you it's not something you can talk about. Nobody's there to talk about it. Don't nobody want to go talk to this team shrink because you don't trust that they gonna do the right thing. And don't nobody want to go talk to a psychologist anyway. Like, you're a 20 something year old man, you're not like, hey, let me go talk through these feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know.
But it's a new generation of kids, luckily, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, they got a different attitude about this. So, you know, you hope on that.
Yeah.
I got two picks I want to run by you that I found to be interesting for different reasons. One, the dude Dalton Kincaid that went to Buffalo. And I feel like Buffalo is one of those places that has decided we're going to have at least one fan favorite in a pass pattern. Like we know what the people need. We know what the people want. And it's not just that they always got like, it's not just like some white dude playing tight end. It's always a dude playing tight end that you know damn well that's a white dude. Dawson Knox, yeah. Dalton Kincaid. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you don't need to take the helmet off. If it's cold out, he got sleeves on.
Yes.
You're good to go.
Yes. That boy's a beast, though. Yeah, I don't want to pretend like he's not.
He ain't a blocker, but he is going to be a problem in the pass patterns. They're not going to be able to guard him with safeties. Well, we'll see. I mean, I think he's a special player. I'm surprised. I feel like they didn't come into the draft like, we're going to get this dude. I feel like they were like, ooh.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah. I think he could be a problem in that offense. And yeah, he going to be a fan favorite. Day uno.
Stephon Diggs better get his mind right. Don't be out here acting up and acting bad.
Stephon Diggs be pregame signing autographs, playing catch with little kids. And Stephon Diggs, no matter what you say, Stephon Diggs deserve more money than you can give him, because pre-Stephon Diggs, we had an issue at the quarterback spot.
Yes.
Post-Stephon Diggs, you got a monster.
He unlocked there. The monster. Like, he unlocked the menace.
Yeah, he unlocked the menace. The menace was in a cage, banging on the walls, occasionally doing something amazing, but not getting no progress. Stephon Diggs came in there like, why don't I just open this door, this man coverage door? Why don't I just open that up and see what happens? And then he got out. It was a terror.
Yo, the other pick, you know, we talked about a little earlier, Baltimore taking Zay Flowers. So, did you get an offer from Boston College coming out of high school?
Uh-uh.
Okay. Well, like, the reason I asked it was.
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. I'm sorry. I did.
Yeah. I imagine you got offers from that list, right? And that list, when I talk about it, especially from the East Coast, Boston College, Wake Forest,
Duke,
yep. Georgia Tech, right? Yep. Where you got to have certain grades to get in. And so they typically wind up with kind of a different set of players, like Boston College being a Jesuit school, that they get a lot of those kids that go to Jesuit schools. But like, when you interview the players who went to Boston College, they typically sound a little bit different than the players in the rest of the ACC. They're just mining from a different pool. There's no shade to anybody, but you get where I'm coming from on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was aware that this Zay Flowers young man went to Boston College. So I was like, oh, okay. I got an idea what's going on here. Dog, he walked out there for the draft, and I was like, what part of Florida are you from, sir?
Boston College trying to win.
like, and then I went and checked his offer list, and it was a couple of those. Like, Wake Forest was on there, but it was really a bunch of smaller schools because he himself was small. But no, that was not the dude that I was expecting. I want to know what his first week in Boston was like when he got up there like, man, what the hell this is? Hey, man, I need a coat. It's cold up here, bro.
I don't know how they got him up there. I'm sure there's more to the story. But, yeah, no, I remember getting – that was the first tier. That was the first round of offers was Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Duke, Boston College. And then I played my junior season. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to need y'all to stop calling my house. we're not going there.
No, they got your PSAT scores. Like, it's the same way all of us. Exactly. You get them letters off the PSAT scores. They put in the database, give us everybody that's over this number. They're like, all right, let us know who all district got this right here, and maybe we can start having some conversations about what was going on. But no, that was – and that's not to say that you can't look like Zay Flowers and be smart. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that is not the dude I thought was going to be walking through that door.
It's not even about being smart as much as it's about the way that they present. Like Boston College, the type, I haven't looked it up, but they one of them schools where I'm assuming that they got to wear suits on the road trips.
Right.
Like it's just like it's generally it's not even about how smart the person is as much as it feels like the perception of the institution that they want to put out there. Combined with like, yeah, we Georgia Tech specifically, Duke specifically, they like, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame falls in that category where there are some places where you're going to have good scores also, but you can have good scores. But if you got long dreads, they don't want you. They don't want you because they don't want to look like that because they understand back to the original thing that some rules going to have to change around this NFL if we can't make sure that Joe Burrow turned into a superstar.
Yeah, like Duke got a different situation. They're like, look, we got to do what we got to do, baby. Yeah. Like we can't be turning them down. We too close to Atlanta. Atlanta got quirks to the person that you're trying to get. Like, if I'm not mistaken, I think Duke offered Pac-Man Jones.
Damn.
Yes, and I have to say, I wish that would have happened. Good, but he had the grades.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Pac-Man stupid is a different kind of stupid. Like it's the unsafe stupid.
Well, I mean, back to the Pac-Man conversation. It is a great type of stupid for football, though.
Yes,
that man was a hell of a football player. In part because, like, I mean, thinking through decisions, maybe not.
Pac-Man got the Georgia Tech offer, by the way.
Yeah,
and people got to understand, man. Anytime they good at football, they have overcome the odds in ways that you can't possibly understand. I don't know what the football major is at Georgia Tech, but I'm here to tell you, it ain't even really a football major.
Yeah. Georgia Tech's a tough place.
I have a buddy who has a PhD in economics from the University of Michigan. That is a top 10 program.
Mm-hmm.
His cumulative GPA at Georgia Tech was a 2.5. And he still got a ride to go to Michigan. In economics, because that's how hard Georgia Tech is.
Goodness gracious. And you know what makes Georgia Tech even harder? It is in Atlanta. It's all the way in Atlanta. It ain't like in the outskirts like most. Like we say that University of Maryland is in D.C. No, it's in College Park, Maryland. It's like a 20-minute ride from D.C. You walk outside your dorm in Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it's on 14th Street.
Yeah, you have varsity.
Like, yeah. Well, the other part is, for what most dudes are into, you need to walk out of that dorm because Georgia Tech is a sausage party.
Yeah.
I went to a party at Georgia Tech one time. I was not going to do that twice. I went to school 10 minutes away from Georgia Tech and met one girl that went there ever. Not that she was the only girl there, but it's the only one that I met. It is not a fun place.
It does not seem like a fun place. I don't know how they get anybody that has options to go there.
Yeah. It's in especially Atlanta. Don't think about it.
Yeah, especially when they was running the damn wing T or whatever they was running. Yeah,
but that was the thing.
They had to do that because they couldn't get nobody to go there.
I gave them credit for that. They were like, look, man, we just gotta figure out how we go make this work. Because trying to do this these other ways, they ain't never going to win nothing. Like, they might as well go to the straight up bone. And they figured out. They're like, look, we can win the conference like once every 8 years. We have no chance of ever doing that otherwise. From time to time, we're going to go 3-8. but we're probably going to go 3-8 at some point any other way.
They need a sports major, man. You just go ahead and find you a little pipeline. It'll be better for everybody. It'll be better for the school. You get more money. You have more fans, more people want to go there. Just go ahead and find you a little pipeline.
They've been trying so long and so hard to just figure out something. Like, you know, they figured out in basketball, Bobby Crimmins go get them New York boys. They ain't really, but like when I was in college, they had a big thing in the newspaper. And this was the end of the Crimmins era, basically, which was he kept recruiting these dudes who was flunking out.
Yeah. It's impossible. Like the amount of effort, amount of time and effort and energy that you have to put in to sports is probably like way above what a normal student puts into school.
Yes.
And then these guys also have to put in like some level of normal school stuff. But the amount of time and effort that you have to put in sports is what you got to put into to survive the Georgia Tech engineering program.
Yeah.
So so first you have to be born with crazy athleticism and also be crazy smart. Then you got to be able to have enough time to put in the football and to put into engineering. Yeah, it's a small little group that can play there and perform.
Poor Calvin Johnson had to do all that studying and everything else just to not catch passes for Reggie Ball.
He caught some on me, monster.
That's right. I forgot you.
I told you.
You're of that era.
He was a freshman. I was a junior, I think. Or I might have been a senior. And like I was good. And I was like, hey, am I wearing no freshman? He's like, he big. Yeah, he big. Mini can't run or whatever. We'll figure it out. Reggie Ball was throwing errant passes in his general vicinity. And he was climbing up. And I was like, I had a 42-inch vertical at the combine. Like, I could jump. But he had one, too, except he was 6'5". Oh, gosh, just climbing up and then landing on me. And I was like, damn, that hurt.
Yeah, it's kind of impossible to explain to people, like, that dude's a wide receiver. Like, if you meet DK Calvin Metcalf. Johnson in person.
Except more agile. Like, DK Metcalf yes. can't really run routes. Calvin Johnson was running routes. Calvin Johnson moved like a basketball player. Like how it seems weird that a 6'5 dude can handle the ball and cross over and whatever and step back. Yeah, that's Calvin Johnson.
One of my agents played high school football with Calvin Johnson.
No, he didn't.
And he says that he he would talk to Calvin about, you know, where you going. He went to Georgia Tech and he, you know, yeah, I'm gonna be a scientist to do all of this. And my agent said he looked at him. Apparently he was an agent even then. He looked at him like, yeah, okay, buddy, you're going to be playing NFL football.
I'm going to be a scientist. Experimenting all right on DBs.
Well, no, see, the other thing, though, I went to college with his sister.
Yeah, I know.
She is a scientist.
Yeah.
Like it was a reasonable presumption for him to make. Like, they really drilled it to him properly. Academics are what matters, but dog.
It was unreasonable once you saw him.
Like, what's the square root of these touchdowns, dog?
Man, his defensive end size and run like, yeah.
No, did you hear that? Problem. Last thing I'm gonna say before we get out of here. We had Nate Tyson on a Wednesday, and I actually saw him put it online. He went to one of these sites that you put in a player's all their combine measurables.
Oh, mock draft.
Who the cop is, mm-hmm. And the cop for Anthony Richardson is Khalil Mack. Hall of Fame edge rusher, future Hall of Fame edge rusher Khalil Mack. That's the comp.
Oh, man. Yeah, that ain't a comp, man. That ain't a quarterback.
Dude, and somebody asked me on Twitter, and they were just like, you know, I don't know if this matters, but Anthony Richardson in a dome. And I'm like, it does not matter.
Yeah.
On turf? That fast dude on turf?
I had come around to being really high on Anthony Richardson, and I seen his tape. It's not beautiful. I get that. But the idea that you want to be ahead of these curves or at least on the leading edge of it, it's like it seems obvious. If you look at Chicago, might be the best example. Where the floor is for their offense is already so high because they got a super athlete at quarterback. And now maybe he won't develop into the fully rounded quarterback that you want him to be. But when you have like a traditional quarterback, there is no floor. There's no running floor to keep your team afloat and to keep your guy out there developing. And Anthony Richardson may never turn into something, but the risk is lower than I think people think it is. And the reward is much higher. So also, like, go for
try.
It.
You just gotta try. Like, yeah. I tell the story. Some friends of mine, they have a child. who's now like 14, he's in high school. But they knew when he was born, you know, they did all the growth plate stuff. Like, they knew this boy probably going to turn out to be like in 6'9", 6'10 range.
Yeah.
And so at some point, they decided they were going to get him into the, like, the basketball, playing with the kids older and all of this. And, you know, I work in this business, so I'm skeptical of that. Like, it's just kind of, I don't know if this is the right path or the way to go or whatever it is. But the argument was a strong one. We got to try. Mm-hmm. Like, we have, if he doesn't like it, whatever, we can go for it, you know, whatever it is. But we got a kid with the physical, like, it's too much not to at least look into it based on the physics of the young man. And it's working out, like, as far as I can tell. Yeah, that's the same thing with Anthony Richardson. Yeah. Like, you got to give this a run. If it's right there in front of you, you got to see. You got to give this a check on what it could be.
Yeah,
you really do.
Yeah, especially with Steich in there. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. But you're right. He's not going to be able to sit out a year. Not with what they got there. He's going to play. He might start week one, but he's going to be starting real soon.
But I tell you this, though, the way he talked, I would be surprised if right now he wasn't somewhere doing some cone drills with his feet or whatever it is. Like, he sounds like he gets it. I told you, when he decided he was changing his number away from 15, that's where I was like, oh, okay, I got you. Austin Reeves still out there doing that AR-15 thing. You're like, I don't see what the big deal is. Anthony Richardson was like, yo, bad for the brand, baby. I'm now number 7.
Yeah, he can't afford to do that.
Even though AR-15 is a nickname, fits his big ass perfectly.
Yeah, it do. Yeah. You remember Andre Kirilenko?
Yes.
AK-47. Yeah.
The number nobody's ever wanted. And he from the land of the AK-47.
It was perfect. If it wasn't for the fact that he was playing in the American National Basketball League, where these guns ain't nearly as amusing.
I mean, I don't imagine they're that amusing in Russia either.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. Yeah, good point. Never mind. He just don't care. Yeah, I remember that AK-47 or the Kirilenko article where, I mean, I'm sure you remember it. It was like about how his wife gave him like one cheat a year.
Yes. I was like, I know a trap when I see one.
Nah, man. If that's what you want to do, go ahead and don't get married. But if, I mean, I guess I mind my business. Different strokes, different folks.
Different strokes, different folks, but I never believe it. Never buy it. That's a setup. That's a test that I'm going to pass. Don't you worry. I'm going to pass or I'm going to not take it. One or two. I'm a pass. But that, Dominique Foxworth, check him out on GetUp. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out and Debatable. And, of course, check him out on the Dominique Foxworth Show, available wherever you get your podcast. I appreciate you, man.
Oh, I appreciate you, brother.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Remember, hit the voicemail, 860-516-4119. We're going to go with oldie but goodie this time. Tell us about that time the game's cheating. 860-516-4119. Idy Khan, Parker Owens, and Dan Stancic handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.